This interview originally aired in January 2011.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. A fascinating story today. Mother George, a black midwife in the early 1900s, who delivered many children over a 40-year period in southeastern Idaho. Among them was the grandmother of the author of this historical novel, Lee Cantwell. When Mother George died about 1919 and was dressed for burial, it was discovered that she was a man. And so Lee Cantwell searched, mostly unsuccessfully, for information concerning this person who everyone in Gray's Lake area seemed to have heard of, but no detailed facts were available. Lee Cantwell decided to write a historical novel answering the questions that had tantalized him for years. How would a black man learn the skills of midwifery? Why would he choose to masquerade as a woman for all those years? And included in this novel, other interests of Mr. Cantwell, including battlefield surgery and advances in medicine, including advances in childbirth, development of anesthesia. Very interesting questions, the effects and after effects of slavery, frontier, Idaho, and what would the place of a black man have been? Possible reasons that for this fascinating story, Lee Cantwell has written other books, including Cross Currents and Finders Keepers, published by Deseret Book and Bookcraft, respectively. And his new historical novel is called Mother George, the Midwife Who Shocked Gray's Lake. Lee Cantwell, welcome to Access Utah.
Thank you.
So you are a retired dentist.
I am.
Interest in writing. And this particular story is something, if you didn't live directly, you certainly heard of, I imagine. In fact, as you've said, Mother George delivered your grandmother.
That's right. They were on a cattle ranch in Gray's Lake, and it was in 1988 and 89 that they were there, and it was one of the worst winters that anybody could ever remember. They lost all their cattle, and even their horses. But that spring in June, on June 14th, 1889. Grandmother was delivered by this black midwife. And what she always said was, "I was delivered by a Negro mammy who my mother said had the largest hands she had ever seen on a woman and who wore men's shoes."
So this is what was known, and people in Gray's Lake would have known of this black midwife, very much a part of the community.
For over 40 years, must have delivered hundreds, if not thousands, of young infants.
Yeah.
But one day my mother or my grandmother was telling this story, and her cousin from the area up in Gray's Lake was visiting with her, and she said, "Oh, F, don't tell that story." When they dressed her for burial, they found out she was a man.
So when did this become known in the Gray's Lake area?
Well, it would have been about 1919. Mm-hmm. The reason that I can establish that is that Ellen Carney, who is an author and historian in that area, and who is the one who gave me most of my information, of course, the information was extremely limited, mm-hmm. and really only just the fact that Mother George had lived there, and that she was black, and then that she was discovered that she was a man. And Ellen Carney's father had moved into the area in about 1917. And he says a couple of years later, he heard this story. And so that's how I established the dates. Actually, I went up to the area and asked around and talked to everybody that seemed to have any information, and nobody could give me any information at all. And since I had mentioned to Ellen about my grandmother, she had other friends who were historians, and one of them was Quincy Jensen. And he was writing a history at that time of southeastern Idaho. And Quincy called me on the telephone and said, "Have you Can you verify the fact that your grandmother was delivered by this Mother George? And I said, oh, yes. And he says, could you send me an affidavit or a statement of some kind to indicate that? Because I have never been able to find anyone who would admit being delivered by Mother George, although she must have delivered many. And so I had my aunt, Wanda Nielsen, send a letter to him and indicate that, and he printed it in his book. And in gratitude, he sent me a huge picture of Mother George, about 11 by 14, and I was so fascinated by that picture. I looked at it a lot. And the thing that was so remarkable to me was, to me, this looked like a woman. Mm-hmm. No sign of a beard. And every, you know, all you got to do is watch a little NBA basketball, and you see the heavy beards that, even if they've shaved, that show through. And in this picture, I just didn't see that. And I just thought, it's a mistake. It's an old tradition or something, but I don't believe it. And then I had the occasion of treating a patient who was an American Indian. And I was as close as a dentist gets to patients. And I looked at that man's face and I thought, his face is completely without a beard. You know, he's hairless face. And I thought, I wonder if it's possible that this person could have been part American Indian.
And so you weave that into your novel. And we'll obviously get into the fascinating characters in this historical novel, and very logical way that you create a backstory for it. We don't have the story, so you've created one. What was the effect on the people of Grays Lake, do you think, then and through their descendants upon the shocking discovery that this midwife who delivered many babies over 40 years upon her death, found out that she's a man?
What it seems to me like is that this person was greatly accepted and honored. And then when I was reading one of Ellen Carney's books and found the same picture that had been sent to me, and on the back of it had this statement. Let me read the statement that it had.
All right.
It says, Mother George. This was written on the back of the photograph that he had sent me, who lived at Grays Lake and is buried there. She was a midwife and a successful doctor. Her father was a Negro. Her mother was an Indian. And that just clicked with me, and suddenly I believed the story. But I went up into that area and I wandered around, went through the graveyards, and some of these graveyards in that area are out in fields of grain and so forth. And just not, things are not the same as they were back in those days. I couldn't find any sign of a grave or any information. I only had the fact that I knew she existed. She delivered my grandma. She was a black, and then it made no sense to me that the stories that came out about that were obviously true, because otherwise why would there even be a story? She would have just died, been buried with honor, and that would have been the end of it.
Fascinating story, and of course, there are many questions that come out of that, and that's, I guess, the impetus for writing a novel.
Right.
Why? How would a black man in that era have learned that medical knowledge? Why would a black man pass for decades as a woman? And, of course, many other questions. And we'll get to those as we go along. And, of course, advances in medicine, the invention of anesthesia, battlefield surgery. Obviously, some of this would have come about because of your profession, right? As a dental surgeon, you're interested in surgery.
I am, and so I was fascinated by that, And especially interested in anesthesia, because a dentist lives with pain constantly. And every dentist is judged by how free he can be from inflicting pain on his patient. So I understand that. And consequently, it's interesting to me that the inventors of general anesthesia were dentists. Mm-hmm. And because of this great interest that they had. And at some point, I'd like to tell you the story of how that came about.
We'll do that. We'll definitely do that as the hour goes on. Maybe now would be a good time to have you read a passage from the book. Tell us what this is going to be.
This is the portion of the book that covers the discovery of Mother George being a man. And in this instance, they found her in a hotel. And, of course, she always kept her door locked in my story because she didn't want to be surprised. And when they finally found her and found her dead, this is the incident, because they're getting ready to take care of the body. It starts out, "But Liza," Letty protested, "I never laid out a body for burial, never once." "Don't you think..." "It's time you learned how. Don't fight me on this. Mary Jane can tell people to stay away and they'll do it. I'm not sure you can. I don't want a bunch of old biddies gawking at Mother George while we're doing what we have to do. We'll have a viewing when we're done. Right now, we have to take care of our friend, and I'd like to do it with a little dignity." Letty nodded. "I'll try, but I don't know if I can stand to touch her, Liza. I've never touched a dead person, not even Mama when she died." "I'm ashamed of you, Letty. Mother George helped you have all four of your children. Can't you do this for her? Now come on, help me turn her in the bed. I'm going to try to arrange her hair the way she wore it." Letty reached out to take hold of her dead friend's wrist and recoiled from the touch. "Lordy, Liza, she's cold as ice." She steadied herself with a chair by the bed. "She's colder than this chair." She touched the paneled wall. "She's colder than this wall. She's the coldest thing in this room, except maybe the brass bed frame. I don't understand, Liza. Why should a dead person's body be colder than wood?" "I don't know, but it is. Now stop, Letty. Quit fussing. Get hold of her and help me." The two women turned their friend in the bed and let her head extend over the edge. Her head maintained the same angle as when was held up by the pillows. Letty gasped. "It looks like she's trying to sit up." "Oh, I don't know, Liza. Maybe you ought to get Mary Jane. I can stop people from bothering you. I know I can. Don't you think it would be better?" Liza pressed her lips together with disgust. "Go get some soap and water and a pair of scissors. We'll cut her nightgown off. It'll be easier. Take her black dress down with you and press it. You know the one I mean, the one with the high neck and the leg of mutton sleeves. Oh, come on, Letty, get moving. We haven't got all day." Mother George's hair was her crowning glory. As Liza undid it, the braids fell down and curled on the floor under her head. It was jet black with little rivers of gray running through it. Beautiful hair. Liza had often admired it. Her own hair was a mousy brown, with about the same amount of gray, but without the same effect. Mother George's gray seemed to make black hair seem blacker and more striking. Liza thought her own gray hair made hers more nondescript and unimpressive. She undid the braids and combed and brushed her friend's hair until it shone, rebraided it, and piled it up as close an approximation of Mother George's usual hairdo as she could manage. Letty came into the room carrying a wash basin filled with warm water. She had a towel over her shoulder and a newly ironed dress over her arm. She complimented Liza on how Mother George's hair looked, set the basin on the end of the bed, and hung up the dress. She tried to make a joke about being reminded of two little girls playing dolls together. Liza knew she was just trying to break the tension and looked up at her and smiled. Letty handed Liza the scissors and began sponging off one of Mother George's ample arms. her revulsion at touching the body, a thing of the past. When they had washed her arms and neck, they turned the blanket down to the foot of the bed, exposing Mother George's embarrassingly large feet. She had always worn men's shoes, not having been able to find any woman's shoes that would fit her. Her hands were very large, too, but the tapering fingers, with meticulously clean and well-trimmed nails, hinted at the dexterity and gentleness that those hands were known for. Liza took the scissors and made cuts down each side of the nightgown. "We'll just lift the top off and slide the bottom out from under her. It'll be easy. Getting into the dress will be a little harder. We might need Mary Jane to help us with that." Liza knew Letty was standing there, washcloth in hand, waiting for her to lift the gown, but she hesitated. Why? She'd done it many times before. But preparing this black woman for burial seemed like a daunting task. She had never seen a naked black person in her life. She scoffed at the idea that being any different from a white one, but somehow the idea of exposing all that black flesh frightened her. Mustn't be tentative, she thought. Letty was doing much better. To show any signs of reticence now would bring back all Letty's fears and make her worthless as a helper. Liza took hold of the bottom of the nightgown and slowly pulled it off the body. Both of them were stunned for a moment. Then Letty started chanting, "Lordy, Lordy, Lordy, Lordy." Liza pulled the covers back over the body and grasped Letty by the shoulders and shook her hard. "Stop that," she said. "Let a body think." She pushed Letty into a chair and began pacing about the room. "How can this be? It makes no sense. Mother George was a man, a man." At the sound of the name, Letty started saying, "Lordy, Lordy, Lordy," again, then stopped. "What do I tell John? A black man delivered our four kids? He reached up inside me and turned little Becky when she was coming breech. If my John knew a black man had..." Liza's eyes flashed. Had what? Had saved Becky's life before she even took her first breath? And made it possible for him to have a daughter to go with his three strong sons? What would he do, Letty? Kill him? Her? Well, it's too late. He's already dead. But what if he wasn't dead? What then? I'll tell you what John ought to do. He ought to drop down on his knees and thank Almighty God for the black man who brought his four children into the world. That's what he ought to do. And now he ought to join together with all the other fathers of the children that this black person has delivered in this country and buy a monument 30 feet high to put on the grave.
Lee Cantwell, reading from his historical novel, Mother George, the Midwife Who Shocked Gray's Lake. Talking about Gray's Lake, Idaho, southeastern Idaho, and this is based on historic fact. In fact, Mother George, the midwife in question here, delivered Lee Cantwell's grandmother. And this discovery around 1919 that was just read from the book. And as you read in that passage, this was a potentially explosive situation. There was real jeopardy in what Mother George was doing. So I'm sure that she had to be very careful through her life.
Actually, if this had been discovered while she was still alive, there's no telling what kind of retribution might have been heaped on her. Mm-hmm. The fact that she was dead and there was nothing to be done, only effectively hide the grave and try to forget it. That's right. Exactly what happened.
And, of course, that gets into very potentially explosive issues of race and gender and passing. Not only, you know, we hear of historical instances of passing where black people would pass as white. We heard of documented cases of women, white women passing as men because they wanted the cowboy life.
That's right.
But I don't know. This may be unique, at least in recorded history. Yeah. And there are specific reasons, very logical reasons, why a black man would pass as a woman. We'll get into that following a break. This is a historical novel based on historic fact. A black woman in late 1800s and early 1900s in Grays Lake, Idaho, southeastern Idaho, who delivered many babies as a midwife, respected member of the community, and it was discovered upon her death that she was really a man.
Utah writer Gina Wickwar.
23 years ago, my husband was offered a position in the physics department at Utah State. At the time, we were living in California, both of us working, our two older kids in college, and our youngest in his junior year of high school. We paid a quick visit to Logan and liked what we saw, but decided to wait a year before moving so that Nat could graduate with his classmates. Thus it was that in mid-August 1988, we stuffed our entire household into two giant Ryder trucks. Then, along with our two sons, drove one. Another couple, our pals from San Francisco, drove the other. Our daughter, working a summer job back in New York, cleverly escaped all this. I was temporarily left behind in our vacant house in Palo Alto to complete the renovation of our garage and to train my replacement at work. I only left for Logan on Columbus Day, driving a car laden with clothes, shoes, a few household plants, and several pots and pans. These had comprised my household for the previous 7 weeks. I remember that year when we knew we would be giving up our California home and friends and moving to Utah. Ben and I spent hours discussing the upcoming upheaval. We went back and forth, wondering if we'd made the right decision. Would we miss the hurly-burly of the Bay Area, running up to San Francisco to see an opera, hiking in the Sierras, tootling down to L.A. for a long weekend, or up to the wine country for a day trip? Would we miss the sophisticated life we were living? Would there be any cultural excitement in northern Utah? Would we like being so far away from a major city? Would we be able to make new friends at our age and important to both of us? Could I get a job? We did, after all, have three kids in college. We needn't have worried, not for a single minute. I managed to get a job within a month. With that job came friends, and with Vin's job came even more friends. And there was the sheer beauty of Cache Valley, its fields green in the summer, snow white in winter, its meandering rivers, its breathtaking mountains, and gorgeous sunsets. We discovered that the rush hours we had hated in California were mere rush minutes in Logan. We discovered the rich cultural life of the valley, the theater, Utah Festival Opera, Summerfest, Musica Reservata, chamber music, the ballet. We discovered tailgate parties, football games, book clubs, Rotary, Yellowstone and Jackson, Soda Springs and Moab. We delighted in the increasing number of restaurants that arrived in town. We discovered local politics, mountain trails, Zion and Bryce, and backyard deer. We rediscovered cross-country skiing, and we learned to love this place like no other we'd ever lived. When I think back on our initial trepidation, I'm a tad embarrassed for thinking that a fulfilled life can only be had in an urban setting. Nothing could be further from the truth we know now. The fullness of life here in Cache Valley is one of the great little secrets of the world. Oh, it's fun visiting Paris and St. Petersburg, New York and Antigua, and Tokyo and Rome. But nothing, absolutely nothing, beats coming around that final bend in Sardine Canyon and seeing this beautiful pastoral valley spread out like a glittering jewel. Frankly, I can't think of anywhere I would rather be than Cache Valley. This is Gina Wickwar.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan, now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're hearing the fascinating story, real-life story. Historic facts are these. Mother George was a black midwife who delivered many children over a 40-year period in southeastern Idaho. Among them, the maternal grandmother of the author of this historical novel, Lee Cantwell. And upon her death, about 1919, while she was being dressed for burial, it was discovered that she was actually a man. So that raises some very interesting questions. Why would a black man come west and decide to pass as a woman? How would she have learned the skills of midwifery? Many other questions, and those are answered, absent historical fact, because all we know are the facts as I've outlined them, and we have a photograph, right? So Lee Cantwell was fascinated by these questions and has created a backstory, and that's this historical novel. It's called Mother George, the Midwife Who Shocked Gray's Lake. And I guess to boil it down, we'll get into to some of the fascinating storylines in your novel. Why would a black man pass as a woman? Well, to have the life that he wanted. And I guess in this case, it involved choosing a profession that he couldn't possibly have done as a man, at least as a black man.
That's right. And during a period of in my novel, I have a period of time when he lives the life of a black man. Of course, his life was sort of protected by his mother, who was a midwife. She was an Indian, and she was a midwife, and she was the wife of a runaway slave, and so she had little George, as she called him, but always kept him with her. He was almost never out of her sight, and even went with her to when she was delivering children, and so because. And he would be dressed as a girl in those early years, because that would be acceptable to the women that she was working with. And so he learned at his mother's elbow, participating in the birth sometimes as he grew older and helping.
Tell us a little bit about this art of midwifery, and it's very gender specific, right? I guess you could have the doctor in to help you, but many times the doctor wasn't available, and it'd be a woman in the community who would have learned this skill.
And every community had them, even in primitive situations, the women were aware of this. And so they were involved in it. And there was, you know, it's just a very long and an honored profession. And of course, these midwives were given a great respect and love. And the fact that I can tell even from my own grandmother's stories that she was so grateful that her mother had somebody to take care of her. And the idea of being concerned about this person being black was just not a consideration. Never came up.
So this would have been a position of respect for this Mother George or any other midwife. And, you know, nowadays you go to the hospital and you have all the attendant medical facilities there. But in this time and in these places, this was a much more dangerous proposition. Women still die in childbirth, but the incidence would have been much higher then.
I'm sure. And then these midwives would just move right in and take care of the mother in the later stages of that pregnancy, you know, at least the last few days and for longer if they needed it. In my own grandmother's case, and I know this to be true, she, her mother had a terrible infection of her breasts, and was just in a horribly frightening situation. In my story, I devote two or three chapters to the actual description of this incident. A lot of that is true, and certainly this problem of mastitis was considerable. And in my story, I have Mother George go to town and come back with a puppy, which she uses to help nurses from the mother and helps her get rid of the infection and so forth that she has. And that's an absolute fact. That's exactly what happened. in the case of my grandmother, at least they used a puppy. Whether Mother George actually suggested that, I don't know. But in the story, that's the way I have it.
Would have been knowledge like this that would have been deposited in midwives like this.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's the reason that you, and very logical reason, and you know, how else would a man like this get to live the life that he wanted? Well, he'd have to pass as a woman to become a midwife. This is apparently what Mother George did. Tell us a little bit about the backstory, the parents of, at least as you've imagined it, of the boy who became Mother George.
In my story, his father is a runaway slave. And of course, we talk about the Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman, who was a real person and who escaped from slavery and then came back and helped release at least 30 other slaves at great fear and trembling to do such a thing. And I'm sure she would have been killed if she'd been caught. But in this case, the slave, George Washington Holmes, is his name, and he escapes, but he knows he's got to go north, but he doesn't know how far to be safe. And he ends up in a snowstorm near an Indian village, and that's how he becomes associated with the person who becomes the mother, and she is a very bright young woman who's been trained by the Jesuit missionaries and sisters, and so we have an extremely intelligent Indian woman who falls in love with this runaway slave, and so that's how they start, and then later on she's racked by conscience because she hasn't had a priest marry her. So she insists that they go back and find a priest. And in the process, one of the people who go hunting for slaves find George and take George and her back to the slaveholder. And it's there that she has the baby and becomes aware of the importance of midwifery and becomes close to an older midwife and becomes a midwife herself.
Now, how did they come in contact then with the Irish abolitionist, Sean Callahan? He's an important figure.
In the story, this Sean Callahan is an abolitionist, and he's on this underground, he's in a station on the Underground Railroad. People escaped slaves will come and stay with him for, you know, overnight or a few days or something like that. And this particular one, George Washington Holmes, has been shot in the back with buckshot and has developed an infection. And so he has to stay longer. And Sean calls upon his son, Josiah, who is a surgeon and has had wonderful training and has even been to Europe studying medical science and surgery. And he comes and helps his father with the slaves sometimes when they have problems. And so that's how they become acquainted.
So a young George helps his mother. And in fact, his mother dresses him up as a little girl to make it more comfortable for him to accompany her on the visits. And even more medical training comes, right, in the novel when he becomes an assistant to this Dr. Callahan.
That's right. And he is an extremely precocious and bright young man. At first he's just driving the horses for Josiah and it's a way to take care of the boy, because the boy gets old enough to where it's no longer comfortable for him to be dressed up as a little girl and go along with the mother. Of course, the father has passed away, and Josiah just sort of takes Mary in, Mary the mother. And she continues with her practice of midwifery, but it's no longer in adolescence, it's no longer comfortable for little George to go along. And so he just sort of takes it with him. But the child is so fascinated with medicine, he wants to learn.
Hmm. We are talking with Lee Cantwell, who just joined us, and talking about his historical novel, Mother George, the Midwife Who Shocked Gray's Lake. This is based on historic fact. Mother George was a black midwife who delivered many children over a 40-year period in southeastern Idaho, the town of Gray's Lake, and among them was Lee Cantwell's grandmother. When Mother George died, about 1919, and was dressed for burial, it was discovered that she was a man. That's the fact. We don't have much beyond that. We have a photograph of Mother George, and so many questions arise, and those are the questions that Lee Cantwell is answering in his historical novel. By the way, where can people go to get more information and perhaps get the book?
I have it available at the book table here in Logan, and it's available at Cantwell Brothers Lumber Company. It's sort of an odd thing for they don't sell a lot of books in Cantwell Brothers, but they have mine. It's at King's English Bookshop on 15th South in Salt Lake City, and Frost Book and Record Shop, Foothill Boulevard in Salt Lake City, Sam Weller's Books on South Main in Salt Lake City, and my dear friend and editor, she also has helped me edit. Actually, my wife is my editor, and Karen has spent endless hours going through and cleaning up my verbiage and taking care of the punctuation and so forth. But Ellen is a dear friend, and she's written many books herself. She lives up in Wayan near Gray's Lake, and has written a recent book on the life of John Gray, after who Gray's Lake got its name. And he was a mountain man and a fascinating individual, and she sells my books too.
Okay. I wonder, is there a email address or something that people could get a hold of you if they live outside of the areas that you've mentioned?
Of course. It's one word and lowercase. It's L, as of course, L-E-E, that's my name. G-E-E, that's my middle initial, Green. But LEEGEE33@hotmail.com.
Okay. LEEGEE33@hotmail.com. For more information, I suppose you could probably send out a book to somebody who inquired if they live outside of Cache Valley or Salt Lake.
I've had others request that.
Mother George, the Midwife Who Shocked Gray's Lake. And the story in brief, the historic fact. In brief, Mother George, a black midwife, delivered many children over a 40-year period in southeastern Idaho. And when Mother George died, about 1919, it was discovered that she was a man. So why would a black man pass as a woman for all those years? Could it have been to follow a profession that perhaps he wanted to follow? How would a black man in that era have gained the medical knowledge that he obviously had? How did this affect the community, especially on learning this shocking fact? Those basically are the facts. We have a photograph, and so to fill in some of those questions, Lee Cantwell has written this historical novel, which also touches on items of interest to a retired dentist, which Lee Cantwell is. Surgery, especially surgery in that era, advances in medicine, development of anesthesia, and these are things that he imagines this young man, George, learns in the Civil War era before he goes west to Gray's Lake, Idaho. Tell us a bit about battlefield surgery. This is not the surgery you and I know today. This was, in fact, you might call it barbaric, but I guess it's what was known at the time.
Interestingly enough, and you can imagine it when you think about it, speed was critical to a surgeon. And in fact, because you were performing painful procedures, the person who could do it the fastest That's where the patients went. And they would have complete amputation of limbs in minutes. No anesthetic to control the terrible pain. Speed was essential. In fact, sometimes they'd have their attendants have stopwatches. How long did it take me to do this? So that they could say, well, I was able to do this in a minute and a half or something like that. And there was no concept of aseptic techniques or even basic cleanliness. The surgeons would wipe their scalpels on their coattails, wear the same dark operating coat for years, and never do anything but a cursory wiping down with a damp cloth. It was a coat of honor, stiff with blood. You can't imagine that. But in the finest hospitals in the East, this is the circumstance that was there. And we see this as Josiah gets his training. And he's a surgeon and son of an abolitionist, and that's how he becomes acquainted with Mother George, who at that time was called Little George, after his father, who was a runaway slave, and his mother is an Indian, and so on. But Josiah studied in Europe and becomes acquainted with some of the giants of medicine and surgery, like Dr. Ignaz Philipp Semmelweis. This is a name that's well known. He discovered the cause of childbed fever. And they were losing scores of mothers that every month in the hospital where he was in Vienna, in an obstetric hospital. And in fact, they had surgeons there. They also had midwives. And on certain days of the week, they would accept patients for midwives. Well, the midwives rarely had childbed fever in their patients. So women would actually try and hold back to avoid having to go to the obstetrician, because the chances of them catching this horrible childbed fever, which was a death sentence, was substantial. And they would even give birth on the stairs of the hospital, trying to avoid going in on a day when they had to go to the obstetricians. And when Semmelweis discovered that what was causing this was dirty hands, he was appalled and just destroyed mentally over the experience. Because they would go to the post-operative dissection rooms and try and figure out what they were doing wrong, and then go directly from there with hardly more than a cursory washing right into the patients and spread the disease from patient to patient. Mm. It was a horrible thing. Mm. When he found this out, he developed some techniques of scrubbing and using chloride of lime and so forth. And the deaths dropped dramatically, even below what the midwives had had. But the doctors complained. They thought it was fussy. They thought it was stupid. It was undignified. And they just fought against it, even though their statistics were so much better. And the head of the obstetrics department finally fired Semmelweis. And and they went right back to the same programs, and the deaths of the women came right back.
And in fact, in your book, you have pushback from the surgeons, fellow surgeons of Josiah.
Oh,
right. He wants to do it in the newer and better methods, and I guess as with anything, there is pushback.
In my story, I have him meet Dr. Semmelweis and become converted to the idea, and incorporated into his surgery. Hmm. And he has a lot of takes a lot of flack for that.
And in this case, the midwives were ahead of the surgeons. I would have contributed perhaps to the respect with which midwives were given this time period.
And the main reason that their statistics were better is because of the the autopsies and so forth that were being done by the doctors, and then the infection carried back into the other patients. Mm-hmm. And that's usually what caused the problem.
Another interest of yours, which you weave into the book, the development of anesthesia. You're saying one reason the surgeons pride themselves on their speed, which perhaps didn't lend itself to good outcomes in some case, I could imagine. But you want to be fast because there's no anesthesia and patients in horrible pain.
That's right. And actually, because, as I mentioned before, a dentist is so very concerned with pain and the problem of that, that Horace Wells was a dentist. He's the one who and he lived back in the Boston area. And he saw a demonstration. It was really kind of just a sideshow where they'd bring people up on stage and have them breathe nitrous oxide. And then they would act funny. And he watched them cavorting around the stage and saw this one fellow hit a chair and lay open a gash on his leg and never even stop dancing and cavorting around. And so he was able to get a hold of some of this nitrous oxide and really tried it on himself. He got the nitrous oxide and breathed it, and then he had his cohort extract a tooth. And he was just amazed. He says, "I felt no more than a pinprick." And so he developed this or used it a lot, and then went in to do a demonstration in Mass General Hospital, in the operating theater, in that great hospital. And Dr. Warren, who was the chief surgeon, had him administer this. But the man who was supposed to be their patient canceled all of a sudden, and they ended up with somebody who was a drinker and overweight and everything. He was a bad candidate, and it came off badly. They extracted the tooth, and the patient screamed, and everybody in the audience said, "Humbug, humbug, humbug." Then, but one of Dr. Wells' compatriots picked up on this. And he developed it, and he was using ether instead. And they had another demonstration a couple of years later, and Morton, who was another dentist, was in on this demonstration, and they did this complicated surgery absolutely painlessly. And at the end, Dr. Warren said, "Gentlemen, this is no humbug."
Hmm. And, of course, you weave a lot of this into the book, a chance to do so. We have about 3 minutes left. One of the things I wanted to cover before we end, you had a chance to imagine this backstory for this historical figure. All we know is a well-respected black midwife who, upon her death, is discovered she's a man. So one of the scenes in the book that you will have thought a lot about is, how does someone come to make that decision, you know, finally? Maybe you have this idea, but, yeah, I'm going to settle in Gray's Lake, and I'm going to be a woman, and I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Why don't you tell us about, you know, what where your imagination took you with that? This had to be a fact at some point. Mother George had to make that decision. We don't know anything about that, but you had the chance to imagine it.
In my book, he comes to this point of decision. He's been living up in Idaho and just bringing trade goods and supplies and so forth from Walla Walla into the area of where the mining is going on. And he has little or no respect. And, you know, he's a nice fellow, and they're kind to him in a way, but it's always on a lower level. Then one day he's sitting around a campfire, and somebody comes riding in and says, "Does anybody know anyone who can help a child. My wife's delivering a child. Do any of you know anyone that I could find? A midwife, a doctor, somebody that could help her. And he has to sit there and realize that he could have saved that child's life. And feel so helpless. And then he looks at his life and he sees how he's treated. He's called boy. It's depreciating. He's always treated with given the most menial tasks possible to do. And he thinks about his mother and how she was loved and how she was honored and revered by all the mothers that were with her. And he felt all that and experienced it. And he comes upon a chest full of women's clothes that have been dropped along the side. And so he experiments a little bit and he realizes that I could do this. And so then he just thinks, I'm going to become Mother George. That's what I'm going to do.
And as these life-changing decisions often happen, I imagine, it's, you know, just make the decision and go with it. Much else, of course, in this book, and more information about the book at email address, leegee33@hotmail.com. The author is Lee Cantwell. The novel is Mother George, the Midwife Who Shocked Gray's Lake. This is based on historic fact. Mother George, a black midwife, delivered many children over 40 years in southeastern Idaho, and when she died in about 1919, it was discovered that she was a man, and so this is the backstory. Fascinating book, and the hour has flown by. Thank you so much, Lee Cantwell.
It's a pleasure.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1, 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1, 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1, 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1, 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, 91.5 Logan.